There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inside the Wolf's Den. I'm Joni Wolfswinkel here with my other half, Sean Wolfswinkel. How are you doing today?
Good. How's everybody doing? It's good to be back and good to be recording.
Yes. Again, so. Exciting. We are on episode 29. Can you believe we're
30.
On episode
30. This is 30.
Is it 30? Yeah. Okay. Well, it's episode 30 then.
So we made, we're in, I don't know what I was going to say. Like, I was going to say triple digits.
Not yet, but
we're doing well. So we're being consistent, and hopefully everybody's getting a lot of value out of this.
Yeah, so. And so if you have if you're just new to listening into this, we are we started a series taking a deeper dive into buying, managing, and selling residential real estate. And today we're going to be talking about your real estate team, which is crucial to have. It's kind of like when you're playing sports, right? You need to have your Correct. Team backing you up. Yeah,
this is a real estate's a team sport for sure. So you need to have all your different players in place and to execute well. So
yes. So why don't you start us off, Sean? Real estate agents. That's one of the number one. You know, you have to have a good real estate agent, a hungry real estate agent on your team, whether you're making offers on properties, out there in the real world looking.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, before we even get there, I think this, the team concept, what we're talking about today is, you know, whether you're buying in your local market or you're buying, you know, out of state, out of the country in a different, you need to have your team there locally that's going to support you so that you can live where you want. You can, invest where it makes sense, and your team does majority of the work for you in that market. So you're just the player. You're the one that puts together the pieces and the puzzle pieces or the board pieces together, and then you let them execute. And the nice part is a team is only compensated if they produce. So right. It's not like you're having to pay for all these employees in a team. You are putting together a team that, you know, unless they are making you money, they're not going to cost you anything.
Right. So that's a good point. So, I mean, it doesn't matter where you invest in, you know, you could live where you want to live and, you know, invest where it makes sense as long as you have the right team in place.
Correct. And the, we've matured and grown in our businesses, you know, your team's been a vital impact.
Absolutely.
Whether it's, even I'm going to speak even outside some of the ones we're going to talk about, but like, you know, some of the people that are in place for you and working for you outside of our employee base that are helping you supporting the property management side are vital for your team.
Oh yeah. I mean, if I didn't have the vendors that I have in my property management company, I wouldn't be able to grow and scale like I have been able to and provide the service that I need to for my clients.
Correct. So yeah, let's get into it. So number one, real estate agents. So, you know, talked about those. So you are a real estate agent or a broker. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, so starting off when we started, you know, buying and flipping houses at 19, that was one of the first things that we did. Yeah. You know, we were out there looking for a hungry real estate agent that was going to make offers for us. I mean, we were making, probably 50 offers a week.
At least, yeah.
And so, and we had a real estate agent that was doing that for us. He, you know, at that time there was no DocuSign or, I don't know about emails, because I remember him faxing us listings in the middle of the night.
Yeah, it was a good story with that one. Yeah. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Yeah, in the middle of the night, I think it was like 1 in the morning, all of a sudden we hear something go off, and Sean gets up frazzled thinking that somebody's breaking into our house.
Yeah, and the first thing, that I don't know why, but I grabbed the remote control. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with the remote control, but I was walking around the house with a remote control thinking, I guess I'm going to throw it on him. I don't know. But and it was a fax machine going off. That
at 1 in the morning, there was a new listing that came on the market, and he just knew that he was going to send it to us, you know, before he, you know, when it came on.
Yeah.
And so those are the hungry agents that you want.
Dwayne.
You know? Dwayne. Yeah, I still remember him.
Yeah. I hope he's, we never kept in contact with him, but I mean, he was a hungry real estate agent. He worked it. He worked till 1, 2 in the morning. That was like his time frame that he used to get a lot done. And so the guy was hungry and just persistent and was willing to, you know, put
do the legwork. Yeah. You know, make sure he would run the numbers for us to make sure that, you know, that's, you know, the deal was going to work for us.
Run and get keys. He would make it happen, opening doors for us if we needed to. Mm-hmm. And this is all before you got licensed. But and then, but you know, pay them well. So like, also think about, you know, how can I compensate them or have them work even harder for me? Is give them both sides of the transaction. So not only, you know, when you purchase it, you know, give them the commission on that purchase, but then also when you sell it, list it with that same person or promise it to them so that they get both sides of the commission. They'll work harder for you.
They will. And that's something that we did with him, and he appreciated that.
Yeah. And I mean, they'll go the extra mile for you. I mean, they're hungry. They're making it. They're on commission only. And so they're going to work really hard if you're willing to pay them and compensate them.
Absolutely.
Next person on our list is financing. So lenders and banks are going to be a crucial part of your team. So, you know, the first one, you know, that we do utilize quite frequently are private lenders.
Yes.
So ever since the very beginning of our business, you know, we've utilized private lenders. And my grandpa was my, you know, first private lender in my business. So I started with friends and family, you know, became our first private lender. And we paid them, you know, anywhere from 8% to 12% interest at the time. I usually paid no points, interest only.
Right.
And they got a first mortgage secured against the property. And today we have, you know, millions raised through private individuals that just are looking to get out of the stock market, looking to place their money with, you know, somewhere that's, you know, a safer place, but get a higher return. But you know, when you're presenting to these people, private individuals, whether friends, family, business associates, you know, be presentable. So come with like a package or a presentation that's going to, you know, appeal to them.
Yeah, take it serious, you know, just because they are friends and family and they probably, you know, you tend to be more relaxed about it, you know, like that was one thing with us. Like, no matter what, like we came prepared. We had our bank book, we had our presentations, you know, before and afters, what we were going to do, all of that.
Correct. And so, like, yeah, we had a nice presentation package. It went through the expectations, the returns, you know, if anything goes wrong, what to expect. So if we default, you know, what the next steps are. We give them examples of the promissory notes, the deed of trust. We go before and after photos because a lot of people just love to see photos. So we show them before and after photos of our projects. You know, but even if you're just starting out, you can still get started, you know, just show them like, you know, show them, okay, here's the property I'm looking at buying. Here's the, materials and budget that I'm expected. Here's my contractor bids that I'm expected to do. And here's the profit potential. And here's the numbers laid out. If they see that, that you've spent that much time and you've really walked yourself through it and done all the numbers, you know, they're going to lend money to you.
Exactly.
They're going to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
The next one is community banks. So, you know, these are smaller commercial lenders. So they're going to be typically non-recourse lenders, portfolio lenders, meaning that they don't resell the loan after they originate it. They're going to keep it in-house and service it. So these would be like banks that have typically 5 to 15 branches, usually local or credit unions, local to your market. And, you know, we've always had a lot of success by presenting our bank book. And so we would come in, you know, Jody and I, you know, started in this when we were 19 years old. Like who's going to, you know, who takes us serious at 19 years old? But we came in and got several banks to loan us money in our 20s, but we came in very professional. So we came in with a three-ring binder, We would use Avery labels that would label out each section. So like the first section would be our financials. So like our tax returns, our credit report, our income statement. And then the next would be like the property specifics. And then we'd have other banks that are lending money to us. We would outline the property itself. We'd talk about photos. We'd have our business plan in there. And so like we'd present this nice 3-ring binder to mm-hmm. them, and they're blown away because right. typically a client of theirs would normally come in and say, hey, I want to borrow some money on my property and can I fill out an application? And we're coming in with everything yeah. ready for them.
Exactly. And then the tabs, they know exactly where to, if they're looking for our tax returns, they know exactly where to flip to yeah. it, you know?
So it just makes you, it makes you stand apart from other people, and they know you're a professional. Mm-hmm. And even absolutely. Even if you're young and just starting out. So, but typically those are going to, commercial loans are going to be, you know, 20 to 25 year amortization schedules. They're going to be interest rates, you know, it depends. They're, 4 to 6%. Mm-hmm. They're going to have balloons typically. So they're going to typically balloon or have to be paid off within a five to 10 mm-hmm. year period. But, you know, it's another good source for, you to help you with your rehabs mm-hmm. or to help you with your long-term rentals. And then the last one is conventional financing. So these would be your traditional loans that are backed by Fannie, Freddie, the government. And these would be your typical loan officer type of loans. So, and these are going to be where you're going to purchase with 20% down if you're buying an investment property. Interest rates are very mm-hmm. low. Like right now, mm-hmm. You know, people are like, as we record this today, in November of 2020, you know, interest rates are 3.5%, 3.25 on an investment mm-hmm. property, is what we're seeing a lot of our clients lock, which, you know, is unbelievable. I mean, when we started 20 years ago,
we thought 8%
that was really, really good at that time. And it was a great loan. And, mm-hmm. and that was even on an owner occupied. Yeah. And then I think at 1.6%, we thought that was like uh-huh. unbelievable. And now 3.25 on an investment property. That's incredible.
Right.
And, so, you know, that's where you're going to get your best rates. There are 30-year mortgages, no balloons. But the down payment's going to be a little mm-hmm. bit more. So, and then Fannie Freddie right now has like, you can get up to 10 loans, you know, in your personal name. So it's going to be, you know, a limit on that. But, and then you are going to have to sign as the borrower, where like a commercial bank or private lender, you can do it in your LLC or, mm-hmm. or your commercial property, right. whatever, however you care, your business entity. So,
yeah. Another one we didn't talk about is hard money lenders.
Yes.
You know, hard money. I know when we got started off, when we didn't have the relationships with the local banks and didn't have, you know, we started off young, so we didn't have credibility with, you know, to get a conventional mortgage, that kind of stuff. And so, but we used hard money lenders.
Yeah.
You know, they lent based on property. So,
They didn't care about the borrower. Right. It was all based upon the property or the deal itself or the asset. And so they would lend based upon the asset. Higher interest rate for sure. You know, typically like, you know, when we were using it, it was 12 to 13%. Mm-hmm. Typically the points or origination fees are, you know, somewhere 2-3%.
Yeah.
They're short-term loans, meaning they're usually 6 months, and then there's usually a fee to get it another 6 months, mm-hmm. but very short-term. So it works really well for flips.
Right.
And if you're buying the asset right, so if you're buying at 50, 60 cents on the dollar, it makes sense, you know, because typically they'll lend you like 75% of LTV.
Mm-hmm.
And so loan to value. But yeah.
Well, you could also use it to rehab the property and then refinance it out once it's, you know, correct. Rehabbed as well.
Correct.
Right.
Absolutely. So who's the next one on our team?
Next one is appraisers.
So the appraisers are going to be, you know, this all changed dramatically in 2007 and 2008. Before, you used to be able to develop a little bit of a rapport or request a certain appraiser right. or the lender would be. So if you're working with the same lenders, you would know what appraisers are using and can develop those. But, you know, in 2007 and 2008, there was a lot of fraud, a lot exactly. of issues. So today, you know, you don't have as much control over the appraisers, but it's still good to know, you know, some appraisers.
It is. Yeah. And something that we've done is, you know, on any of our properties, we are prepared for any appraiser that calls us to schedule. We have a, we call it a packet. So we'll give them comparables on properties, you know, what we've actually, the renovations we've done on the expenses on the properties, you know, kind of overwhelm them. So,
Yeah, I mean, we're really doing their job for
right.
them. Yeah, so.
But it helps. Yeah. I mean, I have not had a property not appraise because we have, you know, given them this information ahead of time. Correct. I won't let them go into the property without getting their information so I can send to them.
Correct. So, I mean, and you'll have some appraiser to get all mad, you know, and that you can't give them, but that you can, you know, we get their email, we get their name when we're scheduling the access to the property. And then, you know, like she said, we send our comparables, our rehab costs and fix up and mm-hmm. what we did to the house, scope of renovations, and then the contract. And then we're pretty much telling them this is what the home's worth.
And even if, I mean, we buy so many properties. So, I mean, there's properties that have recently appraised in that same neighborhood. I'll send them the actual appraisals to that because you can't. Yeah. You know, not appraise something that's already appraised.
Yeah, they're not going to contradict their coworkers or their, and then next one would be home inspection company. So, you know, you can use them on the purchase. You mm-hmm. can use, and then definitely, you know, when you're selling the properties, the buyers are going to want a home inspection company. So we always recommend an home inspection company to all of our buyers because, you know, there's a lot of macho, egotistical. I'm not talking bad about home inspectors, but if you're a home inspector out there,
they gotta flex their muscles.
Yeah, they gotta show you how much knowledge they have of houses and
there's
and
always gotta be something wrong.
So I mean, they'll even on new construction, they're gonna find something wrong.
Right.
And that's, you know, they gotta justify their fee of why they're charging what they do. So they're gonna find things, and their goal is to find things wrong. So they're searching for things that are wrong with the house. But you know, if you find a good one that just, you know, understands, you know, what you're trying to do, understands and protecting the home or protecting the buyer, so that making sure things are safe, mm-hmm. making sure things aren't gonna there's issues in the house that are gonna, you know, cause to lose value down the road or quickly. So just those type of things.
Yeah,
but, you know, they're not trying to kill the deal.
No, but I mean, you as the buyer too, you know, buying your first investment property, I mean, you want these people on your team because, I mean, you might not have experience in roofing and foundation, you know, and so they can catch it and that can make or break a deal.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're new, just starting out, you know, as you're got your first deal under contract, you might want to use a home inspector just to, you know, go through it with you and find out, okay, you know, what needs to be done on this home when he reinspects it, you know, later after you're ready to sell and you got mm-hmm. it under contract to sell. What things is he going to be looking for, or she, you know, in the house, so that you know what the items need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And so it, if you're really inexperienced, this is a great way to walk, do the home inspection, go in the attic with him, follow him everywhere and find out what is he looking for? What's wrong? Why is this, you know, why was this installed wrong, or what's wrong with this?
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's key. Even when you're like selling, I know that we do this a lot, you know, when, inspectors tend to say certain things on the report. Well, you know, we coach our contractors, hey, this is what you need to look for on the next one. So like, I don't want to see this happening again. And then if it happens again, you know, then you can.
Correct. And you can rate your, so we do that on all of our sales, is that we'll have the vendor or contractor go back out and fix those repairs. Mm-hmm. But we'll also talk with them or talk with the project manager and say, hey, like, these are the things you need to be catching on every, you know, so every time you're walking the house we're doing a final inspection, you need to say, look for these items because this is what's going to be called out.
Don't see it as often anymore because we've called it off early on and they know what to expect.
Correct. And I know some really good investors out there use the home inspection reports as a grade for each contractor that they use.
Absolutely.
That's a good way to do it.
That's a great way.
Next one is surveyor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, especially if you're dealing in new construction, a survey is going to be awfully important.
And something that you need to do at the very beginning, you know, and you should try to do it before you put any money into the deal because
we've had all sorts of issues. So, like, you know, we've gotten houses without a survey and, you know, there's, give it the Albuquerque one. That's a good example.
Oh, gosh, yes. We thought we had a slam dunk on a property. I think it was a foreclosure. It had a first and a second mortgage. And the second mortgage, we ended up...
Wouldn't settle with us.
Right, they wouldn't settle with us. So we ended up buying the first mortgage, foreclosing on the second mortgage so we can take back the property. Well, it turns out, like, there was a violation on the property, code enforcement. And so we had to go in front of the city. Well, the city wanted to knock down like half of our house because it was built incorrectly.
Yeah. And so it was a big mess because once it got to code violation, there was a variance issue as well. It was over the building line. And so, you know, we tried to get a variance and they were like, no, there's no way you're ever going to get a variance when you have all these code violations. And so like, we ended up having to knock down 1,500 square feet of a house. So it was just a mess.
We thought we had a slam dunk. And then just because we didn't do our homework and our due diligence and didn't get a survey on the property to know that they built over the property line. And
It was a big mess. So it's just imagine like a bobcat just, you know, taking 1,500 square feet of your house down.
And as you cry at the, across the street.
Yeah. We've also made mistakes where neighbors' fences infringe on, you know, they come over onto your property and you're like, well, that's no big deal, until you go talk to that neighbor and they're like, well, I've been mowing your yard for 20 years. So, you owe me $90,000 or $100,000. Or in Texas, they have, what is it called? So correct me later, guys, but it's like almost like squatters' rights. Like they think that since they've been maintaining or they've been maintaining your portion of land, that it's theirs. And you can go to court and fight over it, and it's a big mess. But
We've even been chased off with machetes just where this is our lot. No, it's not. They're like chasing us down the road.
That's a big mess. I feel bad for Bob, our project manager, having to deal with
that
guy.
He's seen it all.
So just get a survey. It protects you, because there's all sorts of issues out there. Fences don't line up, building lines are messed up, and you can miss a lot of things. And if you're in new construction, it's crucial.
It's crucial.
Making sure that your form surveys are in and that you're building in the correct area and you're not on any easements or, you know, you were in the building line restrictions. So make sure you take care of those. Next one on your team is an architect or home design company.
Yeah, we have one that does it turnkey for us. You know, they do the plans, they run the plans to the city. And so it's truly a hands off for us. You know, we don't have time and energy to do that. So we have one on our team that does it all. And, you know, we have weekly meetings with them on, you know, what they've done that week and, you know, what projects are coming out of the city so we can start building on. So. Yeah,
and they'll have relationships with the city because they run the plans in and, so they'll have relationships that they can call on or call in a favor or say, hey, I need this one or can you approve this, you know, and so they'll usually have, because they're there so often, they develop those relationships. Right. And so that you can usually get stuff done quicker. So, architects are going to be more money. We used not an architect. It's just a design company. So they're a design and permit company. And so they just help us with those. But they've done an excellent job for us and really help in the new construction site. And they're a lot cheaper than a typical architect would be.
Yeah.
So.
And title companies. We've been with the same title company for now, 15 years?
Yeah. Yeah, so they've serviced all our needs. Mm-hmm. They've helped, and how we found out about them or came upon them. We used to use somebody else, and we had an issue with the
deed. It was we bought a property that was sold on a quitclaim deed.
Yeah,
right. And so we went to sell the property, and we couldn't sell it, so we had to go back to the title company
that issued the initial title insurance.
Right, and it had to be, wasn't it? It was them. And so anyhow, so we ended up having to, our years of knocking on doors paid off because we ended up having to go to the prior owner to get them to sign a deed, which was difficult in itself. We had to do some negotiating and of course they wanted money for it. But our current title company was the closing title company but they helped us through the transaction and to this day, I mean, they still
have been very loyal. Mm-hmm. And the owner of the company has been one of our biggest private lenders for, man, the last 15 years.
Years.
I mean, he's the largest lender we have privately. And so we've had a really great relationship. And his son's the real estate attorney that we use. His other son is our real estate insurance agent.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and then, it's been a good relationship, family relationship, and we've got to know him over the years. So they're going to be vital as your title company, you know, is making sure that you got clear title, making sure that everything's checked. Next one's your real estate attorney. So, you know, they can handle easement agreements, closing, they can draft real estate contracts for you, review contracts for you to make sure you're, and then defend you if you ever have a lawsuit. Yeah. So,
and even set up your LLC if you, you know, want to set up an LLC for your properties, they can do that for you as well.
Yeah. So that we've had, again, a good relationship where they've liked working with us. We've built a good relationship where our real estate attorney has also been our one of our larger private lenders as well. And it's been a good relationship too. So not only see all, if you notice a trend that a lot of our team end up becoming some of our lenders too.
But you know what? Yeah. It's all about building relationships and, you know, keeping those close relationships with you and the connections you make.
Correct. So. And they're also, they'll be out there and they'll know things, they'll see things and hear things and like refer you on to really good deals and opportunities too down the road.
And they'll also look out for you as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So next one is property management company.
Yeah. So, I mean, you definitely need a good property management company on your team because that will make or break your property. I mean, if you don't have good property management in place, then, you know, that could cost you.
Correct. So, I mean, what can they do? So somebody that maybe wants to invest out of state, what would the property management company do for you?
Boots on the ground. I mean, they know the markets, you know, they know what they can get for rents in the area. And then they can also analyze, you know, what the property is going to need in terms of make ready to get the property rent ready.
Correct. Yeah, it's awesome. And I mean, and keep you out of trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Keep you out of trouble. I don't know how many times we're, you know, because we have to follow property code and not all investors know that. They're like, I don't want to pay for that. Well, no, we're trying to save you here, you know? So definitely keeping them out of trouble.
Comps, I think, you know, like
comparables.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Knowing what the property's going to rent for. Mm-hmm. And they'll do a lot of legwork for you. So if you're just looking at investing in a specific market, you know, and you want to just make sure that this deal that it, you know, you got to perform on it. Is it really going to rent for this? You can, you know, have them look at it. You can probably have one of their team members go and visit and give you a estimate on the rehab.
In interviewing your property management company, I think you should have a list of questions on what your property management company does for you, right? Because I think that I get calls every day that, you know, the only thing that they ask about is what's your price, you know, how much in management fees do you charge? What do you charge in leasing fees? But they don't get into the nuts and bolts of what the property management company does for you, okay? You get what you pay for, basically.
Okay. So, I mean, they should go with a list of questions, like, you know.
Be prepared. Yeah. Like, what do you want? Like, what are your days on market? You know, what is your average make ready? You know, a list of questions.
Average, like how many units you manage.
What are the steps you take to process an application? What do you look for?
Correct. How do you handle evictions? You know, especially in a time like today, how are you handling collections and evictions? Your make ready, you know, do you charge on make ready costs? What's your fees? Yeah, you can get into fees. It's important as you look at it. But also what services are they doing? What customer service, you know, how do they handle communication? I think should be a really big one. So like, how are they only responding, you know, when there's an issue? Are they being proactive on their communication? Are they...
What types of properties they manage, too. Yeah. I mean, because, I mean, you don't want, you know, if you're looking at, you know, over 1,000, you don't want somebody that's managing $500 amount, you know, then you know it's probably not a good fit.
Yeah. So, and then how many staff they have. I think you should know if they're properly staffed and if they can adequately support, you know,
that's
your expectations are.
Absolutely.
Next one is contractors. So, you know, if, you know, for we're going to get into trades, but this is more for like, you know, managing the project. So your general contractors, so they can handle projects from start to finish. Mm-hmm. They have the crews in place. You know, they'll do it for a percentage of the total estimated cost. But you need a good contractor that's going to support you, that's going to know what to do, that's going to know what to look out for.
Right. And it's kind of like you have to test and, you know, trial because, I mean, our current contractor has been with us probably for a good 12 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they come and go. They do good for a little bit and then they fall off, you know. So it's like one of those constant things that you have to keep finding contractors.
Yeah. Always be looking, always be asking for referrals, you know. sometimes they're great for a while and then they, mm-hmm. they fall off the bandwagon and then some, and then you always, you can't let your guard down. And this is not, this may be unfair, but you always got to inspect what you expect.
Yes.
So again, I'll say that. Inspect what you expect. Yeah, you have to always, you can't, you know, there was a year there that I stopped doing that. And I took a lot of faith on our contractors.
Yeah. And the product was terrible. Yeah. I mean, you know, you stopped going to job sites because you were too busy in the office and, you know, and relied on them solely to get things done because, I mean, they've been doing it the same way for 12 years, you know, and so they should know what to expect. But no, like, you have to be on them constantly. Yeah.
And they're just trying to get in and out of the jobs and onto the next, mm-hmm. you know, onto the next one as quickly as possible. They're trying to make money. And so, you know,
I get that.
Sometimes it's not always being malicious or that they're trying to, you know, take advantage of you. Sometimes it's just they're just trying to make as much money as they can and move into the next. They're trying to feed their family too. So, but you got to make sure that you hold them accountable and keep them on.
And you take care of them too. That was another thing too, is, you know, contractors, they tend to want to get paid when they finish the job. So, you know, be prepared to do that. If you want loyal contractors,
pay on time.
Exactly.
Right. And pay as you expected or how you laid it out on the contract. But and we've always really taken good care of them. So we've, you know, we've financed homes for them over the years, or their family, you know, and owner
vehicles.
We bought a vehicle for one year. But we also, when you want to just, you know, on a Friday afternoon and you just want to take care of them, we've brought them, you know,
Rudy's barbecue. Yeah.
And, beer sometimes, but not always. But I mean, you know, take care of them. Mm-hmm. They'll go out of their way for you.
Absolutely.
Trade. So I think you need to have every trade in your pocket. And a lot of these you can just develop by word of mouth and by referrals, asking other trades for, you know, hey, do you have a plumber? Or do you have an electrician?
And again, constantly feeding that, you know, multiples of each trade because they will come and go.
Correct. So like electricians, handyman, appliance companies, flooring, glass and mirror people, countertops.
Yeah.
So have all those in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. The last one we said on your real estate team is a good turnkey provider. So this is, you know, another business that we do along with property management. But we, you know, another good person on your team is a turnkey provider. So somebody that finds properties for you, rehabs them, you know, and then rents them for you. And then you just come and buy them turnkey, ready to go. Or they build new construction and then rent them and then sell them to you. So, you know, this is somebody on your team that you can count on for deal volume. If you're looking right now to take advantage of the low interest rates and, you know, buy out of state, I think a turnkey provider is really going to be a crucial part of your team to make sure that you can hit your investment goals.
Yeah. And again, interviewing them is crucial.
Yeah.
You know,
what would you ask on a turnkey provider? What kind of?
Well, the property management alone. So do they outsource their property management or do they have it in house? Because we've seen it where, you know, they outsource it and it's a mess, you know? And so like when they come here, it's truly like once you're completed with the project, it comes to over to our property management team and the handoff is smooth.
Correct.
We're not going anywhere.
Correct. And I think going back to what Joni mentioned earlier, as we wrap this up, you know, your team, you need to develop that relationship. Mm-hmm. It's all about, it's the relationship you have with your team. So, you know, whether it be your bankers, your agents, your private lenders, your property management company, contractors, turnkey providers, you want to develop that relationship, spend time with them. You know, I recommend if you're investing out of state, visit the team, you know, visit the property management, visit the turnkey, visit the job sites, you know, develop that rapport and spend time with them and it'll pay off in the long run. But,
totally agree.
You know, it's gotta be the relationship and the time invested. So as you build your team, develop that relationship, continue to always be working on it. I think always be adding on to it and develop and growing and any last words?
No, if you have any questions, any of our listeners have questions on any of the value that we added today, then please reach out to us. You know, share this with your friends and like us, give us a review.
Awesome. Yeah, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there. talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.